We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside our guy, Tyler Dragon for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Charlie Goldsmith, you'll see both of their work over on Cincinnati.com. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. About 24 hours removed from the team's second scrimmage, a scrimmage that the defense clapped back and won. But yeah, today is going good for a Monday off day.
It was a loud scrimmage. That was my number one takeaway. I'm sure we'll talk more about it, but that was the loudest I've heard Paul Brown Stadium in a long time.
Yeah, and the Bengals were at Paul Brown Stadium. They had some of that crowd noise blaring for the offense and defense, so Joe Burrow actually had to get adjusted to it. Tyler, how do you feel he looked in scrimmage number two versus one?
Well, he kind of, I would say, regressed a little bit. I don't want to alarm anybody, but his first scrimmage was – you know, he raised some eyebrows and he performed pretty well. That second time around, it wasn't as impressive. He was 19 of 34 passing. He did throw one touchdown pass to Tyler Boyd. Who else? He was the only starting receiver out there. He had an interception, which was kind of controversial. The receiver got tangled up a little bit and there were plenty of bodies on the ground. And the ball just wound up in Jesse Bates' hands. Now, there were some people on the coaching staff that ruled it an interception. There were some people ruled it an INT. So it was kind of dicey. But either way, the ball was in Jesse Bates' hands when the play was over. There weren't real refs out there. But overall, you know, Zach Taylor said the offense's performance was kind of disappointing because there were multiple drops out there. And if there weren't all those drops, the offense probably would have won. The defense won overall 22-13, but I can account for Drew Sample dropping a couple passes. CJ dropped a couple passes. And, you know, overall, I think the offense needed to perform a little bit better than I was expecting them to. But they were without A.J. Green. They were without Joe Mixon. They were without Auden Tate, who Joe Burrow has developed a rapport with, and they were without John Ross. So they were out some weapons there where Joe Burrow could have been comfortable throwing the ball with, and that is a big reason why they ended up with an L.
I feel like it's two different questions asking how did the Bengals offense perform in this scrimmage and how did Joe Burrow perform? Because a lot of the reasons, as Tyler mentioned, a lot of the difficulties are hard to pin on Joe Burrow. For example, the drops, several drop passes. In several situations, the defensive line was able to break through the offensive line pretty quickly and take away some opportunities. So you can't really pin all of that on Joe Burrow either because it comes down to the offensive line a lot of times. And then lastly, with so many wide receivers missing, it's tough to say that Joe Burrow should have had even more completions and even more touchdowns when so many of his top guys are missing. So this is just the second scrimmage, but it was the most formal setting we've seen Joe Burrow. It made me think about what it's going to be like week one, week two, week three. These issues aren't going away. The Bengals wide receivers won't be healthy all season. The offensive line won't be the best in the NFL. So it's how much do you pin on Joe Burrow versus the offense and how do you evaluate both of them simultaneously? I feel like the second scrimmage was really the first time we could do that. And I'm starting to see it's pretty complex.
Charlie, you mentioned.
Now, to his credit, he did pass the ball around a lot. And that is an indicator that he's reading the field well. He had through Tyler Boyd, as I mentioned. Mike Thomas had a few catches. T. Higgins, Uzama, Sample, Stanley Morgan had a nice catch on the sideline. DeMarcus Lodge and Trayvon Williams got involved in the passing game as well. But overall, those pass catchers, you would like to see them be more consistent, especially at that tight end position, because Sample and Uzama both dropped multiple passes. And, you know, I hate to call them out, but – you know, you would like to see more from them, especially knowing that they're going to get significant snaps on the field.
And real quick, my point was that Joe Burrow was still much better a quarterback than we saw from the Bengals last season. But when you look at how he not regressed, but how he just didn't have as impressive an all-star caliber as performance as we saw in his first scrimmage. Looking at some of the reasons that that took place, I think we'll see similar ups and downs during the season, and it'll be more difficult then as well to evaluate Joe Burrow as much as we would like to.
And you mentioned CJ Uzama. One thing that I've noticed, and obviously if you look at Zach Taylor's offense last year and how he really didn't utilize the tight end position, I think that could be different this year with a healthy Drew Sample and CJ when you look at that room and if guys are hurt in the wide receiver room too. One thing I noticed from Joe Burrow during the scrimmage was he wasn't afraid to go back to CJ after some of the drops. CJ started to look better in the second half of the scrimmage, and it just seemed like Joe's trying to get his guys some confidence in the playmaker room. And you look at guys like AJ Green, John Ross, Auden Tate, who were on the sideline. Joe Burrow is really getting a connection with Tyler Boyd, and Tyler Boyd has had to be that guy for the last couple of seasons. He even said that last night in his press conference, that he feels like TB is going to have a big season because they're already developing that connection. We started to see that with Tate when John Ross and AJ Green were sidelined and John Ross wasn't in town. Should there be an area of concern, though? I mean, are we going to see AJ Green week one? Is John Ross going to be out there? Do I expect a full season from the wide receiver room? No, but a once loaded wide receiver room doesn't look that great going into week one.
Yeah, you would like to see AJ Green play full speed at least once before week one. And it really doesn't look like that is going to happen. The Bengals are being extremely cautious with Green and John Ross. Now, Ross, I believe if it was a real game type situation, he would have been out there. The Bengals are describing his arm injury as minor. And the same thing goes for Green. They think his hamstring is just a minor injury. It's still a little tight. It's not 100%. But overall, you would like to see them play and develop some chemistry with Joe Burrow going live.
And I wonder if the Bengals will keep a heavy wide receiver room heading into week one for that reason. We saw that last year. Obviously, last year the difference was AJ Green had a more severe injury than we knew at the time. One and two, more likely a severe injury than he has now from every indication that we've heard. But yeah, it's a big couple weeks or 2 weeks now for figuring out who will be those guys who would fill in if, you know, these injuries stay recurring throughout the season.
We had a surprise return on the sidelines last night. We talked about AJ Green being on the sideline, Carlos Dunlap, John Ross, the running back, Mr. Joe Mixon, who has pretty much been the story this offseason when it comes to, are they going to extend him? Are they going to wait this one out? Over in Saints land, Alvin Kamara has some unexcused absences right now, and some are pointing to this being about contracts. What we heard from the Bengals was Mixon was out last week due to migraines. What's the latest in Joe Mixon, and is he going to be ready for week one, Tyler?
Yeah, what a strange coincidence you have in New Orleans, and the same thing goes for here in Cincinnati. I will say that. And, you know, Joe Mixon said he's been battling migraines, and Zach Taylor has said that as well. I do expect him to practice this week as the team prepares to play the Los Angeles Chargers. But, you know, he is not thrilled about not having a contract. The same goes for Alvin Kamara down there in New Orleans. And they both believe that they should be paid handsomely. And, you know, Alvin Kamara is one of the best running backs in the NFL. And the same argument can be made for Joe Mixon. And, you know, I've said it a lot that, you know, Joe wants some stability. And he knows that, you know, he's 24 years old. He's in his prime right now. And once you turn 30, you know, you really don't get a lot of money as a running back anymore. So he has pretty much a short shelf life, all running backs do by NFL standards. So he wants to be paid right now when it's hot. And he's coming off back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. And he is a focal point of the offense. There's no doubt about it.
So I'm about to share the most controversial opinion I've ever had on this podcast. This Joe Mixon situation is going well. Yes, well, or at least better than it could or should be going. Let's look at the last eight situations for running backs who, in heading into their contract year, have showed up to training camp looking for an extension, hoping to be highly paid. Eight situations, it's worked out twice for Christian McCaffrey and Derrick Henry, who both got paid. Now let's look at the other six sagas. You have Ezekiel Elliott, who had a famous 41-day holdout in 2019. Jerry Jones famously said, "Zeke who?" Ezekiel Elliott was training in Mexico during training camp. You have Le'Veon Bell. Remember what happened there? He missed the entire 2018 season and left the Steelers in free agency. David Johnson, he had a holdout in minicamp in 2018 with the Cardinals. His training camp moment came when he left the field with an injury. He then posted that video, dubbed it to Jay-Z's public service announcement to make a statement about what he wanted. Then there's Melvin Gordon. That was a saga last season, held out during training camp and missed the first four games. Duke Johnson demanded a trade in February and missed all of training camp. Leonard Fournette was up for an extension, got cut today, and then Alvin Kamara. At the end of the day, Joe Mixon missing a few days with migraines, whether or not that's contract-related, it's a much better situation than what basically every other single running back who's been in his situation has dealt with. This seems to be going unbelievably better than we usually see with a running back who's looking to get paid.
You learn from optimistic Lindsay over there.
No, I think everyone should just blame the Panthers right now for making that dumb contract with Christian McCaffrey. I know Christian McCaffrey is a difference maker as an offensive player because he's a pass catcher and he's an amazing running back. But everyone can point at that and say that was a really dumb deal. And all the other running backs are looking at talking with their agents and saying, I better get paid. Look at Kamara. Look at Joe Mixon. And then you're right, Charlie. Joe is actually handling this okay and not too bad. He was on the sidelines last night. He was hyping up his teammates. He was talking with Zach Taylor because he's always kind of been that guy. We saw it last year when they were losing. But those guys are talking. They're watching. And now you have Leonard Fournette, which I think is a great decision by Jacksonville. I mean, you see what they're doing over there. They're probably going to get Trevor Lawrence. That'll be interesting to see what happens. They've had a huge turnaround since ever making it close to making the AFC Championship game. But then everyone points at Leonard Fournette and they're like, maybe bring him as a playmaker. Can we just stop that on this podcast right here that Fournette should not make his way to Cincinnati? That's a bad idea.
There is no way that the Bengals sign Leonard Fournette. I see him going to 20 other teams before I see him come into Cincinnati. So people can get that out of their heads right now. Leonard Fournette is not going to be a Bengals running back.
Reports last night, Jeremy Rausch from Fox 19 said that Joe Mixon will play in week one, and I don't think that he's going to sit out any games.
No, I mean, that wasn't really breaking news. Everybody has pretty much expected him to play week one. He's not going to hold out of the regular season. I've all along, Joe Mixon has said he was going to play this season. He never has indicated that he was going to hold out into the season. So that wasn't really breaking news. But what is news is he still wants a contract. And if the Bengals don't pay him, then it's likely that he will be wearing a different uniform next season.
Of all the running backs I just mentioned, only two of them missed games, Le'Veon Bell and Melvin Gordon. And in those situations, there was a lot more tension and a lot more going on than there seems to be with Joe Mixon right now. You know, we saw some crazy sagas with some of the other running backs. Joe Mixon has a contract situation on his hands, but it's not into that disaster territory right now. So the Bengals should be feeling fine.
We'll go to the offensive line right now because that's still been the talk of training camp. What it's looking at like on the right side, is Bobby Hart going to win the starting job? They have some news on the offensive line today because Alex Redmond passed his physical. Jim Turner is a big Redmond kind of guy. Tyler, are they going to have this offensive line set in the next week, or is it going to be more of a rotating musical chairs offensive line? As we know, one of the most important things with them is gaining that chemistry, and that's something that they couldn't get last season.
Well, I still have the pretty much same starters as I predicted before training camp. Jonah Williams at left tackle, Michael Jordan at left guard, Trey Hopkins at center, Xavier Suafilo at right guard, and Bobby Hart at right tackle. Behind them, I do have Alex Redmond, but I do think he's on the bubble, the roster bubble. Billy Price as well, as kind of a rotational guard and center, and also you know, Fred Johnson at right tackle backing up Bobby Hart. I know fans, he's a fan favorite for that right tackle position, but, you know, Bobby Hart has outperformed him thus far. And Hakeem Adeniji, the Bengals like him, his versatility. He can play guard and tackle. So those are the offensive linemen I expect to make the roster. I do think Redmond is a bubble player, but I'm inclined right now to keep him on the roster.
So looking at the Bengals offensive line, you know, as Tyler mentioned, five starters seem pretty set. Williams, Jordan, Hopkins, Ofila, Hart. And then I say we have three backups who are pretty much locks. You have Fred Johnson, who, you know, heading into training camp, many expected to be competing for a starting spot. You have Billy Price, and you have Hakeem Adeniji, who's been, you know, the star of training camp on that offensive line unit, it seems. You know, he's gotten praise several times. So then last year, the Bengals averaged having 9.125 offensive linemen on the roster at a time. They went as low as 8 and as high as 10. So we have 8 locks. So it's possible the Bengals just roll in with those 8, but then more likely they do add one more. You know, it could come down to Neifel, Redmond. They added a center last week. You know, I'm not as much of an expert on offensive line play to give my opinion on which one of those players is most likely to make the squad, but at least they do have 8 guys who they feel very comfortable with.
You mentioned Hakeem Adeniji, and I actually talked to Duke Mannyweather, who was working with him after the draft, and he had told me that they obviously looked at the Bengals' offensive line and in positions as added depth and where he could really go, because there's areas where they struggle. I know he's a rookie, but he's someone who has worked on the right and left side, and I know Dave Lapham is a big Hakeem guy, so it's going to be interesting as the season goes on. If he gets plugged in, if he gets some chances, maybe late in games as an added depth piece in the offensive line. But I want to go on the defensive line right now. Joe Burrow gave them credit last night, because that's some competition that he has to go up against all the time. One of their strongest rooms for the Bengals defensive side and overall as a team. Carlos Dunlap has been sidelined for a while. Is there any concern with that injury?
No, the Bengals are deeming it minor. It's a lower body injury. The good news is that he's been out at practice. He was at the game as a spectator last night, and he has done some work on the side. I do expect him to be available week one, and I expect him to practice as well this week.
You know, we forget because of how many additions the Bengals have made to their defense. Carlos Dunlap is arguably the best player on that line, or on the entire defense, when you consider how Geno Atkins played last year. So much of what the Bengals are hoping to do this season revolves around Dunlap and his ability to create pressure.
There are some Instagram questions over on E&Q Bengals, and the fans have asked some questions. Obviously, talking about the offensive line, we just answered that. But Matt said, should we be worried about the secondary? Trey Waynes was on the sideline last night. He did have his arm in a sling. Some good news is Mackenzie Alexander looks to be back at Paul Brown Stadium. I know John Ross told us last week that it takes about 3 COVID tests to get back in the building. So some good news on that front. Looks like they're going to get Alexander back for practice this week, as they're under 2 weeks until the opener. But how do you guys feel about the secondary right now?
I feel better about the safety group with Von Bell and Jesse Bates. They have looked great in training camp. As far as the cornerback unit, you know, they're a little bit banged up. Trey Waynes was a major blow, his pectoral injury. You have William Jackson out there who's going to start, and he's had, you know, a pretty good lead up and training camp. Shoulder is healthy. And I have a story, shameless plug, on Cincinnati.com, how he's back to having fun again. He wants to get back to that 2017 season level and 2018. Darius Phillips, we all know that he had kind of a breakout season last year. I expect him to start and take Trey Waynes' spot on the outside corner. And it is a good thing, as you said, that Mackenzie Alexander is back in Cincinnati, because he's the player that the Bengals want in that slot to start when in Lou Anarumo's base nickel defense. But overall, the cornerback group is a little thin. I do like Tony Brown. He's has some good moments. He dropped 2 interceptions during the scrimmage yesterday, but the good news is that he does track the ball well, and he does make plays on the ball. If you're dropping interceptions, that means you're making plays on the ball. You're not converting into turnovers. You're not taking advantage of the opportunity. But at least that is a negative play for the offense. It's not a game-changing play, though. And we all know the Bengals were pretty much the bottom of the league in turnover differential. So you want to convert those into INTs. But he's had a pretty good camp thus far.
So the Bengals season last year in 2019 ended in late December. And the first two moves the Bengals made were to sign Winston Rose and acquire Tony Brown off waivers. Fast forward a couple months, and then the very next move they made was to give Greg Maven a contract extension. So the Bengals have targeted guys at the back end of their roster who they clearly believe in at cornerback. These aren't guys who have extensive NFL track records. But they are people, again, the Bengals, specifically defensive coordinator Lou Anarumo, has said he really wants, you know, he went out and got those guys. Anarumo has a background as a secondary coach. He is very intentional about what he wants from that position. So we'll see how much they can contribute. But again, there was intention in who the Bengals brought in at the back end of that position. Throwing LeSean Sims, who they signed later in free agency, and Darius Phillips, who, as we all know, had a very productive end to last season.
I want to stay with Anarumo right now. A lot of the defensive guys, when we've talked to them, said they're getting comfortable because they're going into year two of a similar system. Tyler, how do you think Anarumo is doing with the defensive side right now?
Yeah, they have performed pretty well considering that they've been dealing with injuries, and some of the key players have been absent during the times that they've went on 11-on-11. And yeah, year two under the system, you get faster, you get more comfortable, you know where you need to be, and you're not thinking as much when you're out there on the field. And I expect a lot of those players, especially, you know, William Jackson, Carlos Dunlap, even Geno Atkins, but those players in the secondary too, Sean Williams when he gets on the field, and Jesse Bates, I do expect them to be more comfortable out there because they're in that second year under the system. Jermaine Pratt as well. I have high expectations for Jermaine Pratt because he had a promising rookie year and he wants to develop into a every down, three down linebacker and get better in pass coverage. So year two under a Lou Anarumo system should be beneficial, and you should start to reap the benefits because you have some comfort and knowledge knowing his defense, and you're not out there thinking too much and you're just reacting and playing under the system that you're well familiarized with.
Two things on Lou Anarumo. The first, bouncing off Tyler's point, now we've heard multiple Bengals defensive players say how much more comfortable they are now under Anarumo, and how they understand their role in the scheme and understand what they're expected to do even more. Secondly, Anarumo was able to target players in free agency this offseason. He had a full offseason to prepare and identify for the kind of defense he wanted to shape and build. Now, when we talk about Anarumo, it is important to mention week one's going to be a very big test, especially in this offseason. You know, we'll see how that's affected, the linebacker's ability to tackle, because you're not going in as much contact as you would in a normal offseason. I'm very interested to see how it looks the first week, both schematically and success rate. But overall, it seems to be very positive coming out of Lou Anarumo.
And our second question over on E&Q Bengals, they want to know the expectations going into this season. It's year two for Zach Taylor, another odd offseason for him. Everyone knows what happened his first year. His team goes to the Super Bowl when he's with the Rams. He has a short offseason, hires a staff, and then you're dealing with COVID this offseason, a brand new quarterback in Joe Burrow. What are the expectations? We'll have all of their record predictions and where they're at in AFC North next week. But is 8-8 just a way too high expectation? That's what Aaron wants to know.
I have the Bengals at 6-10, and I may go to 5-11, but right now I have them at 6-10. And no matter if I have them at either record, that is an upgrade from last season. And that's what I think the Bengals should shoot for. I'm not trying to say it's just baby steps, but you have to remember that this division is pretty good. And, you know, the Bengals, they're still battling with some injuries and some unknowns. You know, you don't know when A.J. Green, how healthy he's going to be and what type of player he is going to be once he's on the field. And, you know, that defense, they had a tough time stopping the run last year and weren't all that good stopping the run either. I mean, stopping the pass either. So, you know, you have a lot of holes to shore up. And then we all know the offensive line. Two new starters and Jonah Williams and, you know, Xavier, you want to see them, you know, kind of shore up and solidify that offensive line and be able to upgrade from a season ago where, you know, whether that's run blocking and pass blocking, because you want to have give Joe Burrow some time. You know, you have your prize rookie number one overall pick, but without a good offensive line or at least a serviceable offensive line, then it doesn't matter who you have out there at quarterback. So the Bengals have a lot of areas where you want to see them upgrade from a season ago. And knowing that, and when you look at the entire AFC North, you know, you have the Ravens, you have the Steelers, who should be better with Big Ben healthy and Juju Smith-Schuster coming back. And then you have the Browns, where they do have a new coach, but their talent on both sides of the ball is undeniable. So you look at all the teams in the division, and then you look at the Bengals, it's going to be tough for them to, you know, kind of supplant one of those teams to get maybe third or second in a division. But if they are 6-10 in this second year under Zach Taylor, that is a positive step in the right direction, especially coming after a 2-14 year, which was pretty much a disaster.
So I think it is important to mention that the Bengals were one of the unluckiest teams in football and that Zach Taylor was brought in to groom and win a quarterback like Joe Burrow. But then as Tyler mentioned, you know, if you look at how the Bengals stack up across the AFC North, you know, even at what positions do the Bengals have a case to have the best player at a position in the NFC North? You could make arguments for running back and wide receiver on offense. You know, you got Nick Chubb in this division. James Conner has been really effective. Wide receiver, you have some very good wide receivers in Pittsburgh, some great receivers in Cleveland. And then the Bengals' true strengths on defense are their defensive line and their secondary. Pittsburgh's got one of the best secondaries in football. And by secondary, I meant safety. And, you know, the Steelers have Minkah Fitzpatrick. So the Bengals' best players are very good, and the Bengals have high expectations for them. But there are a lot of different areas in the AFC North where, on paper, you have guys who are just a little bit better in a lot of areas.
I want to get to our last question over on E&Q Bengals. Each week we'll ask them over there. Make sure you're following along over on the Instagram. This is something I wanted to bring up on the podcast. Adam brings up about what we saw in front of the Freedom Center on Saturday. It's been a crazy week for the Cincinnati Bengals because you go back to Carlos Dunlap's comments, and he said he felt like the organization, I'm paraphrasing here, should be doing more when it comes to social injustices that are happening around the world. A couple days later, we heard from Zach Taylor, and he said that they were planning something the next 24 to 36 hours. And we happened to see that on Saturday, and the Bengals released a statement. We heard from Trey Hopkins, who is one of their leaders, and also Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow told us in his media press conference on Sunday after the scrimmage that Trey actually wrote that, and his team voted that he reached the second half of that. And that meant a lot to Joe Burrow. It meant a lot to them as a team. Just talking to some of the players and coaches, even Darren Simmons, who's been around the team for a really long time, says he feels like this group is a really tight-knit group. Mike Brown, Katie Blackburn, the ownership was front and center. Carlos Dunlap, if you watch some of the team social media video, actually pulled Mike Brown to the front in those videos when they were releasing a statement on Saturday. And Adam brings up, what did you think about the Brown family being a part of what we saw on Saturday with a team who wants to see a change?
Yeah, it is a step in the right direction. It is a good sign that you have ownership that is supportive and unified with the team, especially with a problem that's plagued the country for a while. But overall, you'd like to see also actions involved in some initiatives taking place. And so that's the next step to really spark change. I do like the message that they sent. I like what Trey Hopkins wrote, but now it's about, okay, how do we advance the conversation and how do we make solutions? And, you know, what actions are we going to do as a society to create positive change and, you know, pretty much eradicate systemic racism and oppression and police brutality.
You know, as Tyler said, I hope this is a conversation we continue to have throughout the season. And I hope we check in with these players about actions being done. I hope this isn't one moment at the Freedom Center. I hope we continue this going forward.
What do you think it means to have a guy like Joe Burrow? I mean, Zach Taylor talked about it in his media press conference last week. When you have a quarterback on your team who is a white guy, who is one of the leaders, and he speaks up on social media, and he did that before he got in Cincinnati. What do you think that means to the players to know that this rookie quarterback came in here? Not only does he have my back, he has my back on the field, but also when it comes to social injustices. What does that mean for the players?
Yeah, it means a lot because, you know, this isn't just a black problem. And, you know, I hate to get all involved in history, but during the Civil War, the Union soldiers weren't just black soldiers. There were actually very few black soldiers in the Union Army fighting to end slavery. So, and then the abolitionist movement, there were a lot of white people involved, white abolitionists. So it's not just, it has never been just only black people fighting to end racism. It's always been white people involved and other people in other races and nationalities. So it is a good message and a good sign that you have Joe Burrow and all players and all people of around the country speaking out who aren't black, because you need that to end racism, a problem that's been going on for over 400 years.
The Bengals look to continue more when it comes to off the field. We'll stay tuned over on Cincinnati.com because we will have the latest. When you look at training camp, it's kind of over for us. It was an off training camp, a shortened training camp. The Bengals get to practice. We'll have all of that as they hit the practice field starting this week. What's up on Cincinnati.com, guys?
Well, I have a full recap on the scrimmage yesterday. So if you want a breakdown of what happened, my thoughts, it's on Cincinnati.com. And I also have some stories coming up on the offensive line and a 53-man roster projection as well.
I have a story up on what you need to know about the youth infusion at linebacker for the Bengals. And later this week, I'll have a story up on Auden Tate, one of the surprise standout players from training camp.
Check that out, our guys Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith over on Cincinnati.com as the Bengals hit the practice field. We are under 2 weeks until that opener against the Los Angeles Chargers. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.